You know, with a lot of his songs, I'm not even really sure what exactly it's about, but it talks about a lady, and I think it has to do with love in some way, shape, or form. So yes. we're gonna jam on it.
Let's jam on it.
All right. Love in the 21st Century. Here we are. Love in the 21st Century is made possible by the generous contributions of KZFR supporters and by Dahlmeier Insurance Agency, a full-service independent agent and retail broker since 1948. Dahlmeier Insurance provides a wide range of coverage options for individual needs, from homeowners and auto insurance to farm and ranch coverage. Dahlmeier offers assistance by calling 342-6421 in Chico and 533-3424 in Oroville, also at chicoinsurance.com. All right, we're here at KZFR 90.1 FM, Love in the 21st Century. My name is Brian Anthony, and I'm here with Tamara. Our topic of this month, right? It's a month-long topic, is self-love.
Absolutely.
And specifically, what I'm wanting to bring to the table today is a list I've been working on. And you know, it's somewhat short right now because it's one of those things where I keep wanting to try different ways of being able to explore this concept of simple self-love exercises. And really, it's just like, how can we make the action of self-love like as accessible as possible? And how do we do it in simple ways that start building the momentum that get us to the point where we're able to really, truly, deeply love ourselves? Because I know in some of my testing phases with some of this information, like I'll post things on Facebook and or like little videos where I'll have people like go to the mirror right now and say, you know, go look yourself in the eye and say, I love you, you know? And what's interesting is hearing people's response and how it can be hard for people to do that, just that kind of action. And I know that self-love is really nebulous for a lot of people, and especially because we're in a society that's kind of judged on our like failures, you know, like how well we're doing based on these other outside circumstances. So first of all, I want to dispel the myth that we're crazy, or that, you know, it's corny, it's whatever the stipulation is for us to focus attention on ourselves, whether it's like talking to ourselves or loving ourselves, touching ourselves, you know, whatever that might be. You know, that's really kind of the place where you have to start with some of this stuff, really. It's just being okay, dropping into yourself and realizing that it's like this is something that actually is very, very healthy, and not crazy, you know. So I want to start with the list and just go, you know, basically just go through a couple things that I've found are simple little what I call self-love exercises. And a lot of these are things that we probably already do. Some of them seem simple or even like you know, kind of common sense to a certain degree. I just want to drill down a little bit on how we can maximize that kind of self-love that we cultivate with each one of those. So, and I'd love to discuss them as we go through. So, the first one, and actually this is what spawned this list, was I was in a meditation ceremony, and I was just sitting there, and I was like rubbing my feet, you know, just out of whatever, just I was doing it. And I just became so aware all of a sudden in the present moment how much my feet really wanted to be rubbed, like how much they really, really, really wanted a massage, and how much I like ignored that, you know, and how much I neglected my feet. So my first action on my list is a foot massage, right? And it's like, it seems so simple, but I mean, if we actually look at the kind of science or the healing process around foot massage, specifically, like if you look up something like reflexology, I mean, the feet make up basically a microcosm of our body. So there's points on the feet that correlate with all of our organs, all of our tissues, all of our joints, all of the parts of our body. So when we're giving love to our feet, we're literally like loving our entire body. Mm-hmm. So I know it can kind of get daunting. Like me myself, like I play some sports, and I tend to hold tension in my body, and it gets kind of daunting, like feeling like, like one of the things I want to do for self-love is I want to stretch, I want to get these tensions out, but it feels like it's like a hard task to get, you know, put forward. So the foot massage is really like literally a way we can access our whole body, and we're giving gratitude to these parts of our body that literally are probably working the hardest out of any of our parts of our body, for some of us. Now, for some of us that may not use our feet as much or may not be on our feet as much, there's still an intention that goes into being able to do this that that can still be profound. And if you actually don't have, because I want to be all inclusive, if you don't have feeling in your feet, then you can actually look to your hands too. Giving yourself a nice hand massage is an alternative. But I want to dive into this a little bit more. So what do you do when you want to give yourself a foot massage? Well, in order to really kind of drop into that self-love space, I mean, you can do it in a way where it's just like whenever you remember to give your feet some love, that's a great place to start. Just remembering that your feet, like, you know, need to be paid attention to. And when you start paying attention to them, they'll start basically telling you like, hey, there's parts of me that kind of have some tension or some things that might want to get worked out. And the idea is that if you want to drop deeper into that, you know, I like, if you need to, maybe go and wash your feet from the day. Because some people don't really like to touch their dirty feet, and I can understand that. So go give yourself a nice little foot bath. And I like to use coconut oil, or you can get some massage oil. I think coconut oil is nice and easy, accessible. It's great for the skin. And you can just really just use some intuition in terms of just lightly pressing your thumbs onto the bottom of your feet and just kind of lightly getting into the muscles that are in the arch of your feet, and you'll start feeling these knots, you'll start feeling the sore spots, and really just giving yourself time, just time to drop in and feel that. And as you're doing this, one of the things that I remember that I needed to do, because when I first became aware of this, is I started like kind of doing that self flagellation stuff where I was just like, oh man, you're such a jerk to your feet. Like, why have you ignored me? You know, why have you ignored this? And that's going to be defeating the purpose. So I just want to allow us to check in with that, that process, that as you're doing this, if your feet feel sore, if they feel like they're in pain, if you start, you know, kind of lamenting about what you've done to them, try to bring it back to some gratitude and start giving your feet gratitude for where they've taken you, you know, how many miles that you've walked, you know, the different things that you've been able to do as a result of having feet, while you're just gently massaging all the different parts. Get in between your joints, get in between the tendons, and just really just get to all parts of your feet in whatever way feels good. And there are videos online too where you can get into like reflexology and some foot massage techniques if you really want to kind of get into it deeper. But realistically, if you just took like even 5-10 minutes to give yourself a nice little foot massage, have some coconut oil handy, it makes such a huge difference. So that's my first one on my list. Tamron, do you have any thoughts about that?
I think that that was quite an extensive process of dedication to one's feet. And I was thinking as you were talking about that, like, oh, how are my feet doing right now? There's definitely parts of my feet that are like, oh, I could spend some more loving attention with them. And just like that simple process, like you said, of just bringing your awareness there, just that simple practice. It reminds me of a practice that's used when you're feeling really frustrated, like feelings, an emotion that you don't really want to feel, that you like focus on other parts of your body, like how's my hips doing right now, or how are my knees doing right now, mm-hmm. and it like takes that energy out of your mind and into a different place. And like maybe what you find is, you know, some other part of your body that's needing your love and attention, but it helps to sort of dissolve whatever is currently happening for you at that moment.
Totally.
But I also liked how you brought it to the perspective of Chinese medicine and how you're really caring for your whole body when you're taking care of your feet, and so how you're really doing so much at that same time.
Mm-hmm.
But then, you know, there's always that part of me that's like, wait a second though, that's like, where am I going to find this time, Brian? Like, where am I going to find the time to rub my feet extensively? And you know what's amazing, for the times that I have taken the time to rub my own feet, is that you get into it
because totally.
You're just like, oh wow, this like this feels really good. So like at first it kind of seems kind of daunting, and then it, I mean honestly, like if I'm gonna spend like 5-10 minutes on Facebook. I can probably spend it rubbing my own feet.
Totally.
So it's kind of that like a cost benefit thing that happens with self love. I find for myself, making reasons why things are challenging to do for myself, but then just being willing to be really honest with myself and how I spend my time.
Yeah.
And then things become a little bit more clear about, okay, maybe it's not so much that I don't have the time to do it
mm-hmm.
as much as it is, how do I prioritize self-love?
Right, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one of the reasons I wanted to bring this up too, and that, there's a way to do it where you can really drop deep, and yet you can also just kind of do it whenever. And if you want to try to make it a regular practice, that's just simple. Really just right before bed that's the most consistent that I've been with it. Is just like, you know, I get in my bed and I just sit cross-legged for, 5-10 minutes while I'll just give my feet some love. And I also do try to meditate at the end of the day, so I'll either include it in that meditation, at the end. But if you don't do that, if it feels like, your day's full up to the point where you lay your head down on the pillow, I can almost guarantee you can spare just a few minutes before. And I would also wager that there'd be a little bit more, if you have trouble falling asleep, for example,
yes.
and you're not into the meditation thing quite a bit right now or have trouble, this is something that actually almost always gets me more relaxed.
Right.
And just a few minutes, done.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I find what a fascinating connection, too, since you brought up the Chinese medicine, is that if you start to notice what's tender on your feet...
Mm-hmm.
And have the, find the interest in looking up the correlation to what those organs are.
Mm-hmm.
Those organs also have emotional implications in our lives too.
Absolutely.
when they're not doing so hot, or when they're actually too hot.
Mm-hmm.
So it's interesting insights. Not necessarily it's going to like alleviate all of your issues just by becoming more aware of them, but it's interesting to find the correlation of how our physical body is doing and how we are emotionally are doing, and how we can have a lot more control, a lot more direction in how we respond to what's happening to us once we have that awareness.
Absolutely.
And it all just starts with touching your feet.
Totally. It's true.
It's crazy.
Well, you said something earlier that was poignant as well, and that is it was something to the effect that, realistically, when you... doing this is a suggestion that will allow you to start getting some momentum in just becoming aware.
Mm-hmm.
And once that awareness comes, then there's more of a spontaneous kind of like, suddenly I'll be sitting wherever, or just become aware that, oh, my hand, my arm, it feels like it has some tension. And then I'll just sit there for a few minutes and I just kind of give it a little rub and some attention, some gratitude, and I just kind of like, eventually these other kind of parts of your body start being like, hey, what about some love for me? And like when you start getting into that habit a little bit of focusing maybe on one, like the foot massage, then naturally some things start coming up and you start being more aware and able to then give your body parts some love.
Because
mm-hmm. the body is kind of a good place to just start to give yourself some self-love, really,
right.
Because it's the easiest thing for us to be able to just kind of look at and access and be like, oh, okay, I'm going to give myself some love here. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And definitely the most responsive. Sometimes when with our mind and our emotions, we can tend to get lost
mm-hmm.
in what they mean and
yeah.
into these story loops. And so with the body, it's so responsive to our touch and our interaction that we can tell if it's working or if it's hurting or if we need to focus on a different area. And so it really can bring us back home to what's actually happening. And the body is so loud.
Mm-hmm.
Like if something is wrong, the body is going to let you know.
Right.
And so just taking that time and doing some proactive work is such a big self-care.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Cool. Well, then I'm on to my next part of my list. By the way, we're listening to Love in the 21st Century on KZFR 90.1 FM. And if you'd like to call in, and if you have any comments about this, if you have suggestions of your own simple little love exercises that you think fit within the dialogue, then feel free to call in at 530-895 1114.
Yes.
Yeah. All right. So my next one on my list is, you know, this is one that's been talked about a lot. I feel like in, you know, the circles or whatever that I've seen. And that is, it's cooking.
Mm.
So some of us may not cook at all because we feel like we burn water. Some of us might cook a lot, and maybe we cook a lot for other people, or maybe we already cook a lot for ourselves. One of the things I'd like to just highlight about this is really just making the act, and this might not sound as simple as some of the other things on the list in the sense that it might take a little bit more prep, but what I'm really talking about is maybe like a once a month, sparing yourself an hour and a half, whatever it takes for the recipe and the eating. And that is cooking yourself a meal. And really is if you can find the time, and I know that there's that folks out there with family members and this might not be so easily and accessible. So whatever you can do to try to do this, you know, I honor that. And that is really trying to just cook a meal for yourself, mm-hmm. just you.
Mm-hmm.
Especially actually if you're someone that actually cooks a lot for other people. Because at one point in my life, I was like that. You know, I'd like to just like cook and share it with everyone. And I felt like I was doing that for a long time. And really just dropping back into like cooking myself, like taking time. Because then it got into where I was just like cooking as like the necessity for sustenance, right? And I just mm-hmm. like just get it done as quick as I can, make a big batch of stuff to go through my week and just like, you know, go, go, go. And now, you know, every once in a while I'll come across like a tasty recipe and I just like set aside some time. You know, an evening where I just like cook that and I just get into it.
Mm.
And the idea behind this is that just bringing the time into the process of cooking, and the process of cooking being you are in a relationship with the food from the earth where the food came and yourself in processing this gift that you've been given to then be given to your body for the sustenance that allows it to continue to survive. And you can make this really a meditation, and it's not super hard, you know, in that sense. And that is, my suggestion is if you do this, it's you know, if you want to listen to music and whatnot while you're doing this, that's fine. If it gets you kind of amped up and into the cooking mood, I would suggest, however, maybe not like, you know, not watching anything like videos, or because I tend to do that too. Like I'll watch videos or even listen to stuff that's like kind of heady, you know,
mm-hmm.
because the idea is really being in the sensation of the process,
mm-hmm.
and as you're cutting the vegetables and smelling, you know, the smells and feeling the textures and feeling the heat as it's cooking or as whatever the sensations are that come up in that preparation, it's really actually a great way to meditate. And if you're not a meditator but you do actually cook regularly, mm-hmm. this is a good way to make your cooking a meditation as well, and that is just taking some time to really drop into what you're doing, because it's such a great way to just get you right in the moment. And I think it kind of demands that on its own. You know, when you're chopping things, it's a good idea to be in the moment, or else that can be not advantageous. So, yeah, just be there in the experience and being happy and grateful that you have the opportunity to do this where others might. And being happy and grateful that you have the opportunity to cook yourself. And the idea, of course, would be this would be a healthy on whatever, you know, healthy scale that you are willing to be a part of at the moment. This would be a kind of a healthy meal that you know is nourishing to you, but is also tasty and you're excited to eat. And from the time that you're selecting the ingredients to the time that you're sitting down and eating it, just being right in it, in the experience and experiencing that gratitude. And before you eat, taking some time to really just, you know, soak in everything that's on your plate, look at all the vegetables, everything that's on there or whatever is on the plate, and just being really grateful that everything has come together for this experience. And then just taking your time as you're eating, you know. And there's a lot of different things that can go into that. So, I mean, obviously we can actually break down each part like even more. The idea, just as a general concept to make it simple, is that giving yourself the time to be in it, and the gratitude for the process, and just realizing how much joy that food brings. And it's when I do that, it's like my body gets like lit up. Mm. You know, it's just like when I take that first bite, it's invigorating. Mm-hmm. Really, is the best way that I can say it. So yeah, that's my number two on my list.
Nice. Quite detailed process again. I like it. And how to bring self-love to a different aspect of how we show up for ourselves and how we're preparing our food. And it reminds me of, I just was recently beginning to read again Jennifer Salcione's book, who was on our show last week, The Art of Awakened Eating. Mm. And it talks about that, like, awakening your sensations to what you're eating, and how often, not surprisingly, we're very disconnected from that process of really feeling the foods that we're about to eat, really tasting them, but really feeling them with our hands and noticing their textures and their beauty, and how much that process really is enlivened by our participation. Mm-hmm. And how so many things that we do, whether it's talking to people while we're cooking, or we're just focused on the sustenance aspect of it, like, oh, I got to eat to survive. So we're not really just in marveling at the fact of what it is that we're eating. And granted, it is to be taken into consideration what we're eating, like you said, whatever, I liked how you said that, whatever healthy spectrum that we're willing to be on in this moment, you know, because we all have different, you know, different contexts of which we consider to be healthy. But just really whole foods, like being able to marvel at those, like I instantly think of a kiwi. Like, just I remember when I was at Vipassana a couple months ago, and just staring at this kiwi, it's just like, wow, like kiwis are just so amazing with all these like seeds and lines and colorations, and just how beautiful that they are. And so many fruits and so many vegetables are that way, but how often we're not focused on that. We're just focused on the sustenance aspect of it, getting it in so we can move on. Mm-hmm. And so we miss an aspect of the encounter we get to have with that food, one, but also we miss an encounter that we get to have with ourselves.
Absolutely.
In that process. And so I really appreciated what you said, that it's invigorating.
Yeah.
When you bring that process to it, because it really is. It transforms an seemingly ordinary process of feeding yourself into a ritual, into a ceremony that you're getting to have with yourself and with the food that you're communing with.
Yeah, absolutely. One of the other things too, and I appreciate you saying that, is that one of the things you can do to kind of, again, you know, maybe bring this into even more of kind of a simple exercise if cooking feels kind of hard to access right now. And that's what you said, like a fruit, and like just a fruit and vegetable plate, you know, with many different types of fruits and vegetables is very, it's a very sensational experience. Mm-hmm. And you can still go through that process of, you know, going to the store, and I know for me, like, if I were to eat a lot, like a lot of the fruits especially that I would like to eat all the time, I it's hard for me to afford that, actually. So it's like when I have an opportunity to, you know, I just buy a little bit of like each of these little fruits that I don't get to eat that often, and I just, you know, I'll have a couple days where I make this special fruit plate where I've got some blueberries and some strawberries and blackberries, and then I've got some, you know, carrots with some almond butter, and then some fresh like peppers and sweet peppers, and you know, I just cut them all up, and as I'm like selecting these things, and as I'm, you know, rinsing them off, and as I'm cutting them up for preparation, it's a sensational experience, and it takes a lot less time too, but it's still very, very enjoyable. And then when you're going through and you're eating each one of those, I mean, for me, I'm just like always, like you said, in amazement of just like, wow, this fruit is just so amazing when I like sit down and get into the sensation. Because otherwise, you know, sometimes I'll do that and I'll like watch a video and then I just kind of shovel it in my mouth and I realize like I just missed a lot of awesome sensation, really,
right?
You know?
Mm-hmm.
again, going back to the self-love thing, though, it's really what this comes down to in a self-love is that when you're in the sensation of the exchange of food and everything that it gives to you, not only just the nutrition, but that sensational response, mm-hmm. Your body recognizes that goodness mm-hmm. that you're feeding it, that right. that love that you're giving it, you know. So it really is an act of self-love because your body recognizes that you're taking some time to be like, hey, I appreciate you with this goodness.
Mm, yeah. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. And just what you were sharing reminds me of the reality that you don't, like, it's just the care in which we take when we're creating a meal for ourselves. And so when you're talking about, like, the fruit, and for me, it's just like, I noticed what a difference it was once I started to, like, cut my fruit up mm-hmm. versus just eating it.
Totally.
Like, I'm just like, usually, like, grab an apple, eat it, okay, like, I'm moving on with my day, but just the amount of, like, it transforms the experience. Uh-huh. It tastes different
yeah.
to eat an apple that is sliced versus an apple whole.
Totally.
It might sound like the wildest idea to people that are listening that have never tried this, but, I mean, as an experiment, just taking our time to change our relationship to our food has a residual or a reflective experience in our bodies when we're actually eating it. So mm-hmm. it's amazing.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Hooray for food. Simple love tools. So, and again, this list that I've made, I call it simple love exercises, but not all of them are easy.
Right.
And I'm going to get into a few that aren't necessarily easy and at the same time might elicit some information that mm-hmm. we can get into. And as I'm seeing the time go, I think, well, I'm going to have to kind of hand pick a couple of these. You know, okay, so I'm going to say this one just because I really want to encourage people that already do this already and might be shy about it, and then just encourage people who aren't doing it currently. So me being a musician and also a sound therapist, and what I want to do with my Humanity Harmonized project is actually, the main thing is bringing sound as an accessible tool for people to use to help, you know, in their lives, to help bring balance and help bring healing to themselves. And one of the ways is really accessing our voice. Mm-hmm. And we have this stipulation in society that it's like, you know, you either have to be a singer to use your voice in any way that seems positive or beneficial, or you are, you know, you do it in the closet when no one's looking. And mm-hmm. so I want to speak to both of those camps and everyone in between, because mm-hmm. I feel like that is actually something that is a simple love exercise, self-love exercise, and that is singing. Mm-hmm. So, because the science behind it now, and one of the things that I will be presenting in my workshops is the fact that your body really responds well to the coherent vibrations that you can make with your voice. Mm. So when we go to look at things like Sanskrit mantra, right? I mean, this is like for those who don't know what that is, this is like the Om Mani Padme Om, these kinds of the if you've ever done the Om sound at the end of the yoga, this comes from Sanskrit mantra, which was basically a language and a vibration that was intentionally made to unlock human potential, basically, just through the making of sound. And so we've lost a lot of what that means, and that when that was created and when it's passed on through time, like these people don't ask people to be initiated based on whether or not they have a good singing voice. Like, you're not taught Sanskrit mantra if you're only a singer, right? Right. And the reason is because the vibration that you make with your voice can be healing no matter who you are. So just as a very simple self-love exercise for people, before I go, you know, go too deep into that aspect, you can look me up and you can go to one of my workshops for something deeper. And that is just singing and doing it in whatever way, wherever possible, however feels good, you know. Some of us, I think a lot of us already do that, and I think it's great. And I think a lot of us, like, want to do that, and for whatever reason, there's something that's stopping us. And I just want to encourage the people, especially that feel, even in private feel like they aren't great singers, or they, you know, maybe just kind of just barely sing with a song when they know that they feel this desire to kind of belt it out. I just want to encourage you to go for it. Like, get in the shower, turn on, you know, if you have roommates, wait till they're not home, go in your car. If you got a car, it's like the best place to do it. You know, go drive somewhere where you won't be pulling up next to someone if you're like afraid of that. Whatever you got to do to feel like you have your privacy to do that, and put on that song or songs that you really just want to belt out and just go for it. Really just go for it. And for those who haven't really experienced this, it's really profound, actually. Like, even if you don't feel like you're a singer, even if you don't feel like you're on key, or you sound like the person you're singing to, if you really just allow that energy that wants to come out in fullness to that song, you know, moving your body to is great. You know, just like totally getting wild to it. What if it's a wild song? You know, it's really a potent tool, actually. Because as you actually allow yourself to kind of loosen up and just get into it, you actually will start harmonizing even more with that song in the way that you can, and it actually allows your voice to become more harmonious itself, and actually, you know, elicits more of kind of a relaxing, healing response. So just that's it for that one. I mean, it's really simple, very simple. It's just like, just sing, just do it. However way you got to do it. Like, if you got to find a private place to do it, or if you feel more comfortable, you want to get into a choir, you know, like whatever is your comfort zone, then do it. Yeah. Sing your heart.
Sing your heart out. Yes. And I just want to agree and validate with some of the things that you shared, Brian, in terms of feeling uncomfortable with my own voice, or like I wasn't sure that I like sounded the way that it was supposed to sound, and I practiced singing those ways. Not so much in the shower, because I never really understood the shower singing sort of thing. And maybe it's because I take quick showers. Yeah. I don't know. And it usually takes me some time to like drop into that place where I really feel like singing. And when I went to a gathering recently called Spirit Weavers, I took a workshop called Voice Shrine. And the woman that taught the class called what I felt like what I was experiencing as medicine melodies, where basically these mantras sort of would come to me and I would sing them in repetition to myself, and it would like kind of shift my mood. So if I was like in this place of angst or anxiety or frustration, these like one was I love and accept myself, and I would just sing it over and over and over. And then as I sang more with myself, I felt more comfortable singing with other people. And I was just recently at the International Women's Day event, and there was a song circle, and this woman led this amazing song, and so I jumped in and was singing with her. And in that time, I was having that like present moment, like view of myself being like, wow, like I'm singing in front of a like people that I don't know.
Yeah.
And like kind of looking around, like noticing people that aren't singing at all, like not even like opening their mouths or humming or anything, and just remembering what it was like to be in that place of like wanting to harmonize, wanting to feeling it in my body, calling it out, but still, because of whatever, you know, preconceived ideas or stories that I had attached to singing. Like, I think one time in my life that I can really remember, somebody said something about the way that I sang, and it like shut it down.
Oh yeah.
And it's amazing. It took is one time for that to be the story.
Absolutely.
So and so it's interesting, because then there's, since then, as an adult, and I've kind of entered into playing more with my voice. I was singing at an event, and somebody told me that they really liked my voice, and I was like, wow, like that's really cool.
Totally.
Yeah. And you know, because I mean, I think at a certain point we all kind of become familiar with our own voice, and hopefully do start to enjoy how we sound, whether or not it's actually the way that any other particular voice sounds, because that's the magic about singing, as it is the magic of individuality, is that it's great when we don't sound alike. It's great when we harmonize, and it's great when we don't, because that's what gives all the different octaves and the amazing sound.
Totally. Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, and that's such a huge part of what I want to do with my work is really dispel that myth, because every single person, and I'm going to say this with probably a guarantee that people will be like, how can you guarantee this, Brian? I'm going to guarantee it. That every single person who thinks they can't sing was told that at some point in time.
Right.
By someone or some part of society that said that your voice doesn't match what the normal image of what a singer is, and so you are not allowed to sing. At some point in time, right. Someone was told that, those who are not confident. I was even told that. I mean, I'm a singer now, but I was singing in chorus when I was like in sixth grade, and and I loved it. But back then I had a much higher pitched voice, yeah. You know, pre-puberty and whatnot. And then one day someone told me, and I didn't even remember this until I think it was either my mother or my grandmother told me, like just recently, that someone told me I sounded like a girl, and that was it. I was like, I'm not singing anymore. And I ended up going into band and playing a horn instead.
Right.
So it was, you know, it was interesting, like backtracking that, and because even that, when I discovered my voice as an adult, it was very much by accident, because I didn't think I was a singer either. I knew I had a powerful voice. I knew I was loud.
Me too.
You know.
Yeah.
So, anyways, that is such a great self-love tool. It's just singing, because as you said, and as you've experienced, I mean, it can get deeper as well. Once you start opening that up, there's different ways, and you know, there's workshops that I'll be putting on, and things that are out there for you to really actually dive down, and then actually be able to use it as a focus tool. But just to start as a simple love exercise, like just do the singing. Last thing I'll say about the shower. The reason why the shower tends to actually be a good place. Is because of the heat. If you take hot showers, which most of us do, but I've been taking cold showers recently, so I'll make that stipulation. But like, if you take like hot showers, it opens up the voice, and so it actually helps us relax. A lot of the reason why we're off key as singers, it's like we can hear a sound and mimic it. Actually, it's something that's written into all of our DNA. It's just that the confidence in doing that constricts our vocal cords and disallows our vocal cords from actually vibrating at the right rate of speed to match that sound. That's really all it is.
Wow.
Yeah. So anyways, that's why in the shower it's nice, because it loosens up your throat. So if you're tight, you know, whatever, and you can just go at it.
Mm-hmm.
So anyways,
nice
singing. All right. Okay. I want to go into a simple and yet maybe a little bit more difficult love exercise.
Okay.
And this is the one I foreshadowed a little bit earlier, and that was this is eye-gazing yourself.
Ooh.
in the mirror. And, you know, this is where it starts to get into, like, when I first started doing these exercises, I started thinking about, like, these old Saturday Night Live episodes, and I don't know if it was Will Ferrell or someone even older than that, who he would sit in the mirror and he'd be like, you know what, I like me, and gosh darn it, I'm good enough, you know, like that kind of, yeah. There's a lot of comedy that's been made over like using the mirror for like these self-affirmations, so I just want to say, like, if you need to do it again, of course, in like private or whatever is necessary. This is a little bit more of kind of a deep, you know, not necessarily just some affirmation. This is just a deep check-in with yourself. And the way you can start it and make it simple is just going into the mirror when you have an opportunity and just like gazing into your own eyes. And if anyone listening has ever done eye gazing with other people, I think we would all agree that there's some profound things that happen when we gaze into the eyes of other individuals for more than, you know, the time that a lot of times we have this kind of comfort level. And it's kind of the same with ourselves. And so this is a simple exercise that can also be difficult. What tends to get brought up during this eye gazing exercise can be feelings of like, you know, you start looking at your face, you start, you know, feeling the emotions that you can see written on your face, because that will happen with me sometimes. I'll start getting into like the, oh man, Brian, you look tired, or what have you been doing to yourself, like that kind of stuff. So I want to like just backtrack and just say, like, start if you want to make this simple, just start with looking right into your eye. You know, pick your left eye, your right eye, and just looking like into the color of your iris really deeply. You know, look at how your pupil just seems really deep and goes into, you know, nothingness. And just really just studying that, starting small and just starting there. And in my experience with doing this is that it starts building up this kind of this wonder of like, wow, like just the eye, you know, the iris and it's kind of its intrinsic beauty that it has. It once that like that little step is taken, and that's why this might take a few times to kind of get there. And that is like when we start doing this at first, especially if we feel like we're carrying around a lot of self. You know, negative self-talk, negative self-image, then when we do this, it might be difficult because we're going to start kind of analyzing ourselves up and down when we're looking ourselves in the mirror. So the idea is just like with meditation where you just bring yourself back to the breath. It's just try to bring yourself back to the eye and just looking at that. And that's really kind of just a simple place to start. And then as you're developing this, then you can kind of start looking at yourself in my experience, what will happen is you start looking at yourself a little bit differently. Mm-hmm. And in my experience, and once you start getting to that point where you feel like you're getting focused on yourself, on the beauty of your eye, then you can start bringing in gratitude. And what I like to do is just bring up one thing as you're looking yourself in the eye. Just bring up one thing that you feel like you can be grateful that you yourself have done for yourself, or have done in this world, or have done that you feel like has been an accomplishment, or just something positive, whether it was just for the day. Whether it's been for your lifetime, it doesn't have to be big. It doesn't have to be anything really at all that has any kind of weight to it, quote unquote. You know, based on society's views of what's awesome and not. You know, just something that you can be grateful that you've done for yourself, and then speak that like to yourself. Like, I am grateful that you have such and such. Mm-hmm. So the first step is the eye gaze. The second level, I guess you could say, is that gratitude, and just starting with one thing, and then maybe doing more. You know, and as you start doing this, the next third level is then at some point just looking yourself deeply. Once you feel like you're in that place of being grateful, once you've done that, you know, you feel like you're in that spot. Then that's the time that you look at yourself in the eye and you just say, I love you. And that's it. You know, so you can start with that exercise being just the eye gazing. And if you like get into that negative self-talk and you're having a hard time doing it and you break that and you have to walk away and process or do whatever you need to, then great, that's fine. Just try to come back and do it again and then get to those other levels and get to the point where, and the idea is when you say I love you is being at that point where you really do feel grateful, you're feeling some positivity towards yourself and then saying it with earnest. So that's the process. The simplicity of it, again, going back into it, is starting with the eye.
Right. So I guess I have a question about level two.
Yeah.
So in level two, after we've been able to focus on our eyes and we're now at a place of gratitude and remembering something that we're grateful for ourselves that we've done, are we looking for a response in our physical being to be receptive towards that gratitude of whatever we've done? And so I can give an example. I might be able to think of something that I'm grateful for that I've done.
Right.
But there may be a part of me that goes, yeah, you didn't do that by yourself. Or, you know, there might be some some negative story in there too.
Yeah.
Or there just might it may not be 100%, you know, in a response and alignment with whatever I'm sharing about myself. And so I guess what I'm asking is, before I go to level three, and tell myself I love myself, am I waiting for my body to elicit a response of being like, yes, I am actually grateful that I've done these things?
That's a great question. I mean, I would say that you could go both ways. one of the things that is great about this exercise is that if we're at a point where we're willing to kind of face some of the stuff that we are processing with our self-image and with our self-talk, then this is a great point for us to kind of check in as we're doing this exercise. You know, when we're on level one and we're just kind of looking at our eyes and we're having a hard time, you know, not focusing on, you know, maybe we're like really focused on skin blemishes or, you know, something, you know, that kind of superficial stuff or some more internal stuff that is triggered by just looking at ourselves in the mirror. You know, the idea is that just to really be present with whatever that is. What is that that's coming up? And this helps to kind of create a little bit of that delving into that process of how we look at ourselves. And if we have other practices along with this, I mean, we could go into kind of some depth on what would be a good way to, you know, address things that are coming up in this exercise along the way. So the idea is that if you do have some support, you know, whether it's journaling or you have counseling or whatever it might be, as that stuff is coming up, you know, it might be great to actually help process that, because that will help kind of clear some space for you to be able to get to like level two or level three, you know, more in earnest. That being said, if you just do the three steps, even if it doesn't feel so authentic, you know, I've been through several different kind of programs that have talked in several different ways about self-work that talk about like fake it until you make it. Mm-hmm. And I'm not a super big fan of that in a lot of ways. Mm-hmm. However, in this particular instance, just that exercise of doing it, I think one of the things you can do is on that second level is when you have that gratitude thing and you speak it and you don't really feel that great about it, that kind of, there's those buts that come up.
Right. I'd say like, you know, 75%, 80%, it's like in agreement, and then there's still that 20%.
Something else. Yeah. Like, you can either, you know, maybe go through a list and find something else, you know, that you and see if you can get something. Or if you got that there, you just say it and you speak it, and you speak it with, you know, speak it slowly with earnest. You know, I'm grateful that you have XYZ, speaking it to you. And then just go into that, just go into level three and just do it and feel and be present with what's coming up along all three of those levels.
Right.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. I guess what it's reminding me of too is the emotional freedom technique and what Sonia Sophia says, like, even though I feel like this is untrue, I still love and accept myself. And so that idea that in that self-love practice, like being able to acknowledge, okay, yeah, maybe not, like I'm at 80% or I'm at a 90%, even though I do love myself, like, you know. And so just how the practice can be really powerful to move through it, even though it may not feel 100%.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Well, I think we're out of time.
We are winding down. So thank you so much, Brian, for your insightful self-love practices.
Totally.
If people want to get connected with you, you know, just and hear more about your self-love practices, is there any contact information or ways you want to share with our listeners?
Yeah, you can go to Facebook and look up the Humanity Harmonized Coalition Facebook page. It's
awesome.
It's a discussion group. I'll go ahead and post that there.
Yes.
And maybe we can post this list on the Love in the 21st Century Facebook page.
Absolutely.
Cool. Yeah, that'll be the two ways. Let's do that.
Great. Thank you so much for tuning in. We have Ecotopia coming up next. They're on every Tuesday from 6 to 7. Stephen and Susan Chudy join as they discuss environmental issues with nationally renowned authors and activists. EcoTalk, it's your local link to a global network of folks who know and care about the health of our planet. You got a song for us, Brian?
I do. This is a woman named Aurora, which she's just, you've got a very interesting sound and voice, and this is a song called Home. So thanks for joining us, and have a great one.
Lost in the moment again, stuck where the road has no end, keeping the thought in our minds, one day be kind. We are not alive, we are surviving every time. Oh, we
Stay tuned for Ecotopia coming up next, as I am trying to get a few things here going in the station. And we'll be with you in just a moment.
Hey guys, Will Durst here with a few choice words about just making stuff up. It's all the rage now, and we have President Donald J. Trump to thank for raising the practice of tossing out baseless allegations to an art form. He proved an expert on the campaign trail, managing to deflect criticism with various nefarious claims, such as the father of an opponent murdered JFK. Accepting blame is so 2015. Whenever you get in trouble, wave a bright shiny object, throw it into a corner and yell, "Hey, what's that over there?" Recently, the new president accused the old president, Barack Hussein Obama, of wiretapping Trump Tower before the election, with absolutely no proof at all. Even Trump's own staff said, "Huh? What?" Then they went on television and lobbed sparkly Christmas ornaments at cameramen and production assistants. James Clapper, the former director of National Intelligence, which is starting to sound like an oxymoron, denied that any surveillance was authorized. But proving a negative is like throttling a shadow. This fabrication deflection works for President Trump because the media has the attention span of a hoover of hummingbirds in a greenhouse on blossom day. But it can work in real life as well. Think grade school and get creative. Tell the boss that the report is overdue because it was eaten by a pack of wild Tanzanian pigs that have overrun your backyard, even if you live in a high-rise. Caught with someone else's wallet? You weren't stealing, only attempting to protect their possessions from other unscrupulous persons by hiding the money in your back pocket for safekeeping. Does your spouse have naked photos of you in the arms of another? Total misunderstanding. This unfortunate person was suffering from hypothermia, and you were simply applying life-restoring body heat. As Nike used to say,